Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs, and I am so excited to be here for our seventh season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO as we call it, and it was one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. In 2018, our beloved improv show became the podcast it is today, hosted and produced by Gay City News. It is an honor and privilege to hold space for the coming out and coming into self stories our guests share. And I'm so excited about my guest here with me today. Cesar Abreu, he, him, is a lifelong multidisciplinary artist whose journey spans pop stardom, classical stage, and cinematic storytelling. A former child star and Menudo member from Puerto Rico, he has spent nearly two decades performing as a dancer at the Metropolitan Opera. Now also a filmmaker and producer, his work reflects a legacy of movement, memory, and cultural expression, crafting intimate films and bold productions that echo his artistic path. He holds a BFA in dance education from the University of the Arts in Philadelphia and was awarded a full scholarship for his MFA studies at NYU. Cesar, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's an honor and a privilege. How's your day? How's your summer? Catch me up.
So far, I'm having a fantastic summer in the hot city of New York, which traditionally the months of July and August can be very hot. Yesterday, we had a storm. So I think, you know, being in the city is just, it's always unexpected. It's always fresh and new. And it feels lighter because a lot of people that live in the city go away to travel and to, you know, see for alternate ways to deal with the heat. but I'm feeling good. I'm feeling excited about my upcoming season at the Met and the projects that I'm working on now keep me really engaged and appreciative of all of that.
That's awesome. Do you watch the show The Gilded Age?
I do not.
Okay. Well, there's a, it's, I just started it and then binged the whole thing. It's a period piece based in the Gilded Age in the late 1800s in New York City. And it's like based in historical truth. And a big storyline is the founding of the Met. And so now I feel like I know it intimately, even though I've never been. But the show, like seeing the history, has been pretty cool.
I wonder if one of my favorite stage actresses, singers, Donna Murphy, is she in the show?
Let me do a quick little Google, because I don't know.
For some reason, I saw something of hers, and maybe it's
yes.
Is she?
Yes, she is.
Yeah. Okay. So I
want to say
maybe.
Yeah, I think maybe she's Mrs. Astor. But let me double check. All right, this is Murphy. Yeah, as Caroline Schimmerhorn Astor.
I need to watch it. Her. It only
yes.
If only Bernadette Peters could also be in it, then I would probably have some sort of connection, because they were my, you know, as a musical theater enthusiast growing up, I just very much loved them. I recently saw Bernadette in the musical Stephen Sondheim's Old Friends, and she and Lea Salonga were just absolutely powerhouses. The entire cast, really, really, really inspiring.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I'll add it to my list.
Yeah, add it to your list. And just bringing up Lea Salonga, whose name I saw, you know, I've seen on all my like Disney soundtracks. And then recently saw that her child is trans and that she's like a fierce advocate and ally for them, just made me love her a million
Even
times more.
more, indeed, indeed.
Okay, we could gab all day, which is we're gonna do it for a little bit. But before we do, so we I you know, we all have multiple coming out stories, and we have multiple coming into self stories, and those look different for each of us. So I'd love to invite you to share one or two of those stories with us today.
Well, I don't think I've ever shared in detail this particular story. I've always said, if I write a book, I'll probably will write this write about this. But I'm happy that it's happening now. I've had several coming into myself moments, some loud, some internal. But one that truly shaped me happened when I was just, I think, 14 years old. I had just left Menudo and I was trying to navigate what life looked like beyond, I guess, the spotlight. I was already a public figure in Puerto Rico, but privately, I was, as any queer kid, not every, but some. As I, you know, I was in a place of I guess deep confusion and shame around who I was. In Puerto Rico at the time, still these days, but at the time, things were very, very different and very close-minded, and my coming out wasn't gentle. It was dramatic and messy and I guess very public. I was 14, like I was saying, and I was trying to live this, normal life. And one night, a friend from school invited me to a Madonna theme club night. And I grew up with Madonna and I was a big fan. And when we went, it was my first time seeing queer people dancing and kissing and just living out loud. And for a brief moment, it felt like I could exhale. I think for the very first time, I saw queerness expressed with joy and pride and freedom. It honestly felt like home. That was until my older sister showed up, dragged me out of the club, and my entire extended family, including my aunt, my grandma, they were all outside waiting for me in the car. I think in that moment, I felt shame, embarrassment, rage, but also clarity. I knew I couldn't be who I was in that environment. I think the experience was really painful, but it did plant a seed. I left Puerto Rico, I guess, not just to escape, but to expand, to find a place where I could exist without shrinking. I think that moment shaped my artistry. It made me unafraid of transformation, of truth telling, of blurring boundaries between who I am and what I create. And I think whether I'm dancing or directing or making films, I think I'm always channeling that kid who needed freedom. And found it, through art. And looking back, at that experience, it didn't push me toward, I'd say self-acceptance. It just gave me a deeper understanding of why I create. I think art and dancing and all of the arts, music, it became a space where I could be whole, where truth wasn't punished but celebrated. And that's shaped everything I do now, from the way I dance to I guess the stories I choose to tell as a filmmaker. So yeah, that's my coming out story.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing. And I can't imagine the kind of like roller coaster of like, on one end of the, I don't know, spectrum or what, or, experience wheel you had, this like magical, it seems like, moment of, freedom. You said joy and pride and freedom, which are like some of the best feelings you can feel, to then being dragged out of the club. We had, we chatted briefly before we started recording around wanting to focus on resilience. And I mean, one has to be super resilient to be able to hold those, really big and intense life moments, especially at 14.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one would say, why do you wish younger Caesar could have known? And I think that's something that I've asked myself in trying to really reanalyze and find healing towards, for those parts of us that need some. I wish that, if I were to say to that kid, I wish he had known that nothing about him needed to be fixed. That the things he was taught to hide, the softness, the sensitivity, the way he saw beauty in everything, were not liabilities, but superpowers. I wish he knew that the very things that made him feel different would one day become the core of his artistry, his voice, his strength. And mostly I wish he knew he didn't have to earn love by performing for it. He already was enough, even in silence, even in stillness, even before the applause. And those were the things that I wish, but now I get to live reclaiming my truth and being curious about what happened, because it's shaped so much of who I've become now as a gay man.
That's what you just shared was so beautiful. Just that whole kind of like, gift or wish to your younger self. One of the things that I talk about pretty regularly is the idea of my queerness being my superpower, and how it used to feel like the liability. It used to feel like, the thing that I was most afraid of, ashamed of, embarrassed about. And now it's like, it is my superpower. It's what makes me who I am, and it's incredible that we as queer people get to experience kind of like that transformation. And something else you said was gorgeous. A lot, everything you say is, you say it so poetically. But you said you left Puerto Rico not to escape, but to expand. And I think that that's really profound, because I think a lot of folks in cities, that aren't New York and Chicago and LA, might feel like the compression or the inability to explore and be free. And so I love that reframe of from escaping to being able to expand. I love it. So I wanted to make sure we talked about it.
Yeah, I guess it's like what do joy and queerness looks like for me today, and joy and queerness, for me today looks like freedom without any explanation. It's, I think, waking up in my own skin without apology. It's choosing softness over shame. It's dancing at work, crying during a performance that I just saw on Broadway, or going to see Lias Lang or Bernadette, or all these wonderful people. Is laughing too loud with my chosen family. I think queerness isn't just who I love. It's really how I see the world. It's layered, it's expansive, it's expressive, and joy comes from joy comes when I get to create spaces, through film, through movement, through presence, and those spaces is for others. So others can feel that too. So yeah, I think I went on a tangent there, but I think I landed about our my desire to and responsibility to pass it on.
Yeah, no, that was not a tangent at all. I think a lot too about what you said, about queerness is more than who we love. And, for a long time I would see, I mean, I still see it all the time, t-shirts and mugs and, love is love and, all of these things, but like especially during Pride Month, which obviously I care deeply about and love inside and out, up and down. But as a trans person, I want people to think about queerness not just about who we are in romantic or sexual relationships with, but also about our identities, about who we are as people. And I've had to fight very hard and educate all the people all day long, to feel that softness and expansiveness and freedom and being able to wake up in my own skin without apology. And so I think having this conversation more and more about what queerness entails is super important, because I think that a lot of folks are still kind of stuck on the idea that, like Pride Month and queerness really is only about that one thing, when really it is the whole rainbow, if you will, of ways of existing.
Absolutely. And it, you know it, it it's it begs to ask, how is our identity even at work? How does it influence my artistry? And my identity isn't separate from my work. It's literally the lens, the heartbeat, the rhythm, and whether I'm dancing, directing, or I'm always me personally. I'm always drawing from that space of, I guess, in-betweenness, Puerto Rican, but American, pop like the Menudo stuff, and classical like the Met, queer and ever evolving, I think I would say that. There is a richness in hybridity. I don't know if that's a word, but we'll make it. There is richness in that, because it's not just about representation. It's about reclaiming space with beauty and power and truth.
For sure. When you were, so you came out at 14. And if my research is correct, you were in Menudo before that. So you were 12, is that right?
Right, around 12, 13, I was in the group.
So were you aware of your queerness but holding it inside? Or were you like, what was that experience like of being, of being in the spotlight, and a international star? But like tell me more about what that experience was like.
I think that, as a kid, I was always very expressive. I would always, and I had done prior to Menudo, I had done a lot of TV work and theater and musicals, and I was always encouraged by everyone, whether it was my grandparents, oh, do that little monologue or do that little, entertain us, or that was something that was very much celebrated. And when I was working, performing, it was something that was kind of like encouraged to be, But personally, I think that, life in being a queer or gay kid was very difficult because, being expressive is not something that is encouraged. You have to kind of conform to the way people behave in Puerto Rico. It's very, very religious still. So that for me, what felt like oppression, to be who I was something that was almost like a part of me that was that I felt couldn't be fully whole. So that's something that I almost, in a way, put it aside and didn't deal with it until Menudo. Menudo came, it was a mixed bag. It did open a lot of doors, and it was a good experience for me professionally, because I got to pursue what I love, which was performing. But I did learn things that I had to unlearn about who I am as a man, and that is to not feel shame for being expressive and loud and living in my truth, and I had to conform to a mold in which masculinity, toxic masculinity, was celebrated and encouraged. And I think I had to endure that during that sliver of time that I was in the group. And once I was out, I was as I just shared, my coming out, I couldn't stay in the closet for too long. I was I had beautiful and flamboyant mannerisms growing up. I was raised with having strong female figures in my life, and who are very much still part of my life, and that's okay. That's who I was. So now I've reclaimed my past and learned and unlearned behaviors, and try to heal. And go from that place, and that's what I try to share in my work. Interestingly, my first film was very much about reclaiming and exploring my truth. Coincidentally, the my first film I titled Self.
How did you get into filmmaking? So you went from like you were an actor and then a performer with a boy band, and then you're, a dancer at the Met. So you contain multitudes, but how did you specifically get into film?
I've always loved sharing stories. I've always in one way or another, I've loved either becoming a character and telling a story on stage or sharing stories with my friends and my family. Every time we would get together, would always kind of recount stories about other family members, and so that desire or interest was always there. I think maybe dormant. And during the pandemic, there were so many, the Met closed. We lost all of our contracts. I mean, everything closed. And I'm a very social, person, and I experienced a lot of being locked inside, my apartment, and was traumatizing in a way. It's almost like being a bird inside a cage. You have to, you have to continue to fly. And so I found that, being connected digitally to the world was kind of sparked an idea. And I said, well, if I can't go to people and I can't bring an audience to come and see me, and there are no places in which I can perform, what if I were to tell stories and go to where people are, which is on their phones, or everything is streaming now. So I figured that the best way to share my ideas as an artist was pretty much by creating these short films. So creating my that my first film Self was a turning point, because it wasn't just about, ooh, I'm going to make a film. It was some sort of a ritual. It was about exploring the body, queerness, transformation, ancestry. All through visual language that I was shaping on my own terms. I felt like, I guess it felt like reclaiming the pen to write my own mythology, I guess, in a way you could say.
That's amazing. So what other kind, what other besides kind of coming into your filmmaking voice in the pandemic, were there other kinds of discoveries you made while being in lockdown like the rest of us?
I feel like maybe the importance of living I each moment as if it was your last. I think that I gained the value of how things are so impermanent, how one, you can have freedom to do whatever you want, and then you're locked, and so it brings me, it's so funny because now with everything, it's kind of hard not to talk about it, right? Because now we are living in a time where we find so much of our freedoms to be kind of taken away by people wanting to I don't know what, sometimes I'm baffled, control others and in the name of freedom and liberty. And that to me is just so weird. I saw this art piece by someone, by an artist. Please forgive me that I don't have it handy right now, but it was so very much representative of what was going on. And it was an American flag inside a cage. And there was part of me that I could connect to the piece so profoundly because I, in a way, if the flag, represents all of us, but personally, I it almost felt like in my mind, if I could change, what if it was a pride flag that was in there, which very much felt like my childhood living inside, not able to share fully my truth. And, these things with immigrants, I am myself Puerto Rican, an immigrant. I feel like it's almost kind of we are regressing. So one of the main things that the reasons why I'm here is to share the importance of bringing attention to those things that are happening, number one, and to continue to inspire other peoples to live in their truth and their openness and their queerness. It is important. And it is important to stick out for other people that are being oppressed. Because the moment that we fought for our liberation, we had to resort back to that type of fight, because it's not, there are doors closing left and right, and it is up to us to reopen those doors. It is our responsibility to help our brothers or sisters and everyone in between to fight for their freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was researching you and saw your Instagram story, and it was that image that you shared, the American flag in the cage, which I stopped and stared at it for a minute because it was profound. I think a lot about the present time that we're in and what actually is happening in our country, and it's so challenging to think about because it's like, as a queer person, as a trans person, like now it's both like the best time to exist, like in the sense of progress, and also like a really hard, scary time to exist. And so it's like, how can both of those things be true at the same time? And I just finished a book called, it's a book called Let Them Stare, Jonathan Van Ness and Julie Murphy. And it's like, it's fiction, and it's, I didn't realize it, but there's like a ghost involved. I didn't know there was going to be a ghost, but this ghost is a queer person from the 50s and 60s, and just like shares his experience as being a queer person in a small town, and like the fear that he and his partner felt and how secretive they had to be. But then, like, eventually he was like committed to an insane asylum because that's where they put queer people. And it was kind of like the reckoning of the main character, Sully, who is for sure like the JVN of the story, like just the way that Sully speaks. But I'm getting too into the weeds, but it was profound watching Sully's kind of evolution of like, I have to get out of this small town, to kind of understanding the rich queer history of this small town that had been buried away, and that all of these things are true at the same time. And similarly, it's so much to process of like of holding the space for all of the nuances of things. But and generally speaking too, like, it's really scary for so many people out there right now, for immigrants, for people of color, for queer people, the intersection of all of those folks. And I do find that kind of doubling down into art and into creativity and into community is like a profound way to combat these like enormously scary and big feelings.
Indeed. I, prior to us chatting today, one of the things that was sent to me it was, do you remember your Spring of Keys moment.
Yes.
And yes, I and like many moments of recognition, it was subtle but seismic. I think I was I remember I was a teenager still in the fog of figuring out who I was when I saw Truth or Dare, the Madonna documentary of her Blonde Ambition tour. And Madonna, you know, has been a figure at the time. She was the only person that really was presenting or celebrating anything queer or anything gay. And to me, that it almost felt like I could escape, you know, through her and her artistry and whatever she was presenting. And Blonde Ambition was something that, you know, to me as an artist, deeply impacted me. I saw the her dancers on that particular concert, and seeing that the documentary of the concert, they weren't trying to fit in. They moved, they were out and loud and beautiful, and they moved through space with grace and confidence, and I guess something deeper. I'd say self possession. It wasn't about gender or orientation in that moment. I guess it was about just being. And they showed me a version of masculinity that wasn't rigid. It was expressive, fluid, tender. And my body recognized it immediately. It was almost like my ancestors came in and connected to that openness. It was like a quiet spark lit in my chest that said, "You're not alone. There's a path for you too." And that moment didn't just show me what I could be, but it gave me permission to become it. I lost you.
No, I'm here. I was just,
Oh.
I was, I didn't know if you were, gonna say more. I was letting the moment land. I love that. It's, you know, it's that feeling of knowing. It's just that innate internal sense of knowing of like, I see you, I see me, I see our connection, whether we verbalize it or not. There's one of my favorite things about this podcast is I get to interview authors, and so I get to read their books. And have you heard of the author Abdi
I have not.
Nazimian? Highly recommend, because Abdi is also obsessed with Madonna, and Madonna shows up in all of his books. And there's a particular book called Like a Love Story. And it's an homage to Madonna's, like, you know, Like a Virgin, Like a Prayer. So it's called Like a Love Story, and it's beautiful and gorgeous, and I highly recommend that book and all of his books. But it made me think of that book, but also just the power that storytelling has, and just the power of both, you know, you watching this documentary, a film, and these books that we have access to, and how the arts really are the most powerful tool I think we have. And I think that's maybe why it's under fire so much of the time. It's because it's so powerful that the powers that want to keep us small don't want us to have access to that freedom and expansiveness and connection.
Like a love story. I just wrote it down, so I'm gonna definitely look for it. Madonna can be a complex artist. She is still very much alive and creating art, and there have been tons of, people who I write about her and criticize her, and eventually, her legacy will, once she passes, I'm assuming at some point, will define itself. But to me, personally, while people can continue to discuss whether she's relevant or not, that's besides the point, I guess. There is a this is an aside, but there is a line in Stephen Sondheim's musical, Sunday in the Park with George, that says, don't worry if your vision is new. Let others make that decision. They usually do. So I apply it to Madonna because, that always, me as an artist, it kind of like, just create, continue to create, whether, don't worry about all of these forces. But going back to her influence that it had me as a queer kid in Puerto Rico, it liberated me. Her freedom, fighting for being gay is okay, having two queer guys on the campaign about voting, rock the vote, rapping to her, and they're like there with their little shirts and their little hot pants, and like, that's something that you didn't see. And whether she did it to benefit herself or whether she did it to, I mean, she giving it to her or not, she broke barriers and she lifted us at a time that I perhaps needed to be lifted up, and have some representation. So I'm grateful that I had someone, to some kids, maybe Lady Gaga is who does that now for them, or even before her, maybe Britney or maybe Cher or whoever. I mean, name a gay icon. So I'm grateful for the for those artists that came before me and that are continuing to march on in this fight of accepting our community for who we are.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm thinking about too of, you mentioned about, the critique and whether or not Madonna's still relevant. And I think that for so many people she will always be relevant. And I think that the critiques, I think that come with any kind of great artist are because she pushed the boundaries, and so she was trying to create more space in an expansive field. And so with that, of course would come critique, because she's pushing against what we're all, what was the norm. To bring it back to Gilded Age, I'm just thinking about, like, the way that they interact with each other. Like, it's so proper, and like a man and a woman who weren't married could, like, were not allowed to like touch in public, and it was, if they did, it was a scandal. Or the ways that they dressed, like they were always in these like intense, gorgeous outfits. And I'm just, what I was interested in, like, what I would love to see is who is like the first, like, and one of the characters, Mrs. Russell, played by Carrie Coon, kind of comes in, and she has new money, and all the people with old money are like, "What are you doing?" And she's like a disruptor. And I'm interested in seeing, like, the first person who, like, the first woman who, like, didn't wear a gown to, like, tea. Like, what, like, that, I'm sure received critique and was ousted, and whatever, but also I'm imagining sparked a change. Because, now anyone can wear whatever, wherever. So, just like thinking about those like moments that crystallize the change, of course are going to be met with critique, and that person being painted in a terrible light. But those are the moments that are the most necessary for change.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's really about making the umbrella wider so that we all can fit under it. And creating a space where there's room for everything. I don't want to confine someone to, nor I don't have any desire to, or the right to tell someone how they should be living their truth. If you want to pursue that, do it. As long as he doesn't infringe of someone else's, liberty. But I feel like, this word liberty and freedom has been almost thwarted and deconstructed and has become something else for some people in our society. And I think it's time for us to reclaim that, to redefine what freedom is. And if it's not for all people, then it's not freedom at all. So yeah, more Madonnas, more gay icons,
Yes.
more artists, more art, so we can all live in a more prosperous, forward-thinking world, and one that the protection of kids, not some kids, but also the future generation of queer kids, that is important for them to grow up in a world not feeling ashamed for being who they are, in all their complexity, in all their fabulosity, in all their softness. It's okay to embrace that fragility is not necessarily something to shy away from. It's okay to be fragile. It's okay to be who you are. I think ultimately what I hope we all search for or is to go from a place of, my hope is that we navigate towards and from a place of love and understanding and compassion towards one another. And how about maybe some curiosity? Just be curious. That's what I think. I was always a very curious kid, always interested, always observant. And through that filter, I've been able to live a life that at 48, I can feel proud of.
I love that. Curiosity is such a powerful tool, both for self and for, building expansive spaces and making people feel like they belong, of just like getting curious as to where and why people are and where they come from and that kind of thing. I hate to do this, but I have to move us into our lightning round of questions, which are meant to be lighthearted and fun. Answer as quickly as you can. They are open-ended, so they're a little bit more challenging to answer than an either-or question. But I tried to break out of the binary as I was given some lovely feedback a few seasons ago. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Where is your favorite place to think?
My bedroom.
Who is an influential queer person in your life?
Oh, I think we just talked about her, Madonna.
Great. A song that you can listen to on repeat forever.
Oh, wow. New York, New York.
What's one thing you want to be known for?
Wow. My ingenuity to adapt.
Gorgeous. What does identity euphoria feel like to you?
What does identity and euphoria?
Identity euphoria. So when you're like in yourself and you're feeling just, well, I don't want to define it for you, but when you're feeling the most yourself, what does that feel like?
Oh my God. I am feeling most myself when I am creating. Yeah. When every color is accessible, when everything is like, what can I do? And I can paint with this and I can do, and that's a metaphorically speaking, because it's just like, okay, how can I shoot this piece from this angle, and how can I link it to what I'm trying to say? I mean, creating is where I feel most at home.
Beautiful. Where do you find joy?
Nature.
Okay, last one. And there are no right or wrong answers for any of these. Bagels or donuts?
Bagels.
Great. There are no right or wrong answers, but that happens to be the correct answer. So
Yes.
nice work. Cesar,
Thank
thank you
you.
so much for joining me and thank you for coming out.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.